Hello and welcome to Chinwag. I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
And as promised, Chinwaggers, here's a little extra bonus wag for your listening enjoyment.
Bonus.
See you on the other side, waggers.
Paul, let me ask you something. Do you like your family?
It's a really complicated question, Steve. I didn't realize this is where we're going to be going right now.
No, I mean, do you like seeing pictures of your family?
Yeah, sure. Pictures of my family are nice. Yes, sir.
Okay, I've got a great recommendation for you. It is the Aura frame. You've probably seen some of these before. You go to your friend's house and they have a frame on the cabinet or in the living room or whatever, and it has digital photos.
Sure. Yes.
Well, I got this thing and I set it up, super easy to set up. I basically dumped a bunch of photos from my phone right onto it. Very easy to do. Took me just minutes.
All this sounds scary to me.
No, it's incredibly easy.
It's not hard. Okay.
And basically you can put an almost infinite amount of photos on this thing. And then you can set the parameters and it can rotate your family through every 30 seconds.
Amazing.
And it's great because I've got pictures of my son, my family.
Cool.
My dad passed away a few years ago. I get to see him popping up every now and then. The good ghosts of your personal history coming through on this thing.
Nice. That's nice.
They have a great deal for Mother's Day, so listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code ChinwagPod at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
There's a story you wrote that I really liked that is there's a technology that allows us to record every moment of our lives. And so we have every single moment. You have this, and it's become the most accurate possible memory you can have. You have this infallible memory, and it's replaced your memory in a sense. You can just find out everything. And what I took from the story that I thought was really lovely is the idea that actually forgetting and misremembering are really important parts of developing human relationships. And that, in fact, this isn't ultimately going to help you that much in human relationships, right?
Well, so, that's a story called The Truth of Fact, The Truth of Feeling.
Right.
You know, what I was trying to do in that story is kind of to illustrate some of the pros and cons of this. And I guess, you know, it's not that that having this would necessarily be good or necessarily be bad. Like if you and your partner are having an argument about who said what first, at one level, we need to find out who said what first.
Right. Yeah.
And maybe that's useful because at another level, maybe that's not really the problem. Maybe the problem is, it doesn't matter who said what first. It's can you, as a couple, can you get past this? Can you somehow, work through this? Because that's what a relationship is.
I think this is true in politics too, because I think after Franco, in Spain, they created something called the Pact of Forgetting. And I've seen this in Rwanda and in Cambodia, where you need to move on. It's sad, but you have to move on. So you almost have to,
an enforced kind of forgetting.
It's like forgetting and reconciliation. It's weird.
Well, I mean, or like in South Africa, there's sort of the truth and reconciliation.
Exactly.
There is value in knowing what actually happened. But there is also value in sort of moving past it, and I think one of the things that has often happened in sort of these truth and reconciliation sort of committees is that people admit to their crimes and then we move on.
They get some amnesty after they confess certain things
because it's important that you admit what you did, but. Now and then, then we can move on. It is ultimately better for the society, if we can move on. And so I think there's a good case to be made that something similar is true for individual relationships. that we, you know, you can admit, yes, you did the thing, you know, you said the thing, and, you know, you fucked up, and then you're sorry, and the other person forgives you.
You're able to move on.
And then you move on. And it's, you know, so, and that, you know, maybe that is, like, so that is probably better than denying that it happened.
Right.
It's, you know, it's better than, you know, pretending it didn't happen. And it's also better than, you know, looking at the record and saying like, okay, gotcha. Now
slamming somebody in the face with it repeatedly.
Yeah. And then like having that just be, you know, like something that you hold on to forever. Like, well, so, remember, we have the video of you saying the thing. So now, you know, you're never going to live that down.
You know, horrifying.
Yeah. So, So I think those are some of the issues that I was, trying to get at with the story that you're mentioning.
No, it's just nice. It gets at the ambiguity of the technology, and the ambiguity of the human technological interface is really great.
And also, I really like that in your work, you're interested in memory, in addition to like to the question of like, what is the self? What is self-identity? Like, it's not the material self. It's not maybe the religious self or the soul. Is it something like your memory? I'd find that stuff interesting. I guess because we're now like extended mind is this idea that we're like offloading our memories to these devices like our phones, to computers. And even like, it's just unclear what the self is. Like, what are you exactly? Is it just these memories you've had, or is there some spiritual substance that you think continues through your life, you know?
So I would say that, you know, your memories are an important part of you, but they're not the only thing that, you know, that makes you who you are. Who you are as a person also has to do with, you know, like what your goals are, what sort of things you like, how do you interact with other people? Because, you know,
unconscious stuff too.
Yeah. And so we can imagine like a couple hypothetical scenarios. One where a person, you know, they suffer a knock to the head, they retain all of their memories, but their personality changes. You know, so it's like, well, okay, so clearly something has happened. And, you know, we would say like, okay, this is not the same person anymore, even if this person retains all their memories. So who they are is definitely more than just their memories. Conversely, you have a situation where someone, you know, gets a knock on their head and like they lose all their memories, but, you know, their personality remains, you know, unchanged. So there you'd say like, okay, there, you know, there's a real loss there. Especially because like, if they don't remember you, they don't really know you anymore. And so there's a sense in which, because like your relationship with that person was built on all this shared experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if that goes away, you have also lost something. You know, even if their personality remains entirely, you know, the same, they're, you know, they are no longer the person that you knew in a sense, because they no longer have that shared history with you. So in either case, you know, there is something fundamental, that something important that has been lost. And without arguing about, you know, without trying to get into like which one is worse or which one is closer, you know, like I think, you know, that is a simple, you know, way to think that, like, to arrive at the conclusion that, you know, who you are, you know, it involves your memories, but it involves other aspects of yourself. Other aspects besides your memory. So like, you know, memory is not the only thing, but, you know, it's not nothing.
I'm going to ask you something just that's even, I guess because I'm curious, I saw you talk a little bit in something about this, but do you have any belief in anything like a soul, anything immaterial in human beings? Are you an atheist? And is there anything?
I'm an atheist. I'm an atheist. Uh-huh. And so I don't believe in an immaterial soul. I think, we are just matter. But I guess, you know, in a sense, it's kind of, even that phrase, you know, that we are just matter, in a way that's a little dismissive. You know, we're only matter, but, you know,
glorious matter.
Yes. Being made, amazing. You know, made of atoms is not an insult. It's not a bad thing.
Right.
You know,
right.
Hey, listener. It's Zach Harper, Amin Alhassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
Ascertain?
Yes.
Okay. Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why do you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Yeah, human beings, you know, are amazing, and we are made just of atoms. And it, so it doesn't, I don't think it we should think of it as diminishing us to say that we are made only of atoms.
Yeah, because so many people's take on that is that that's such a dark, grim, nihilistic view of the world. That it, to reduce it just to that is just terribly, must be such a sad way to live. You know, that's how you see things. But I agree with you that it's just as strangely miraculous. I am not an atheist, but looking at it that way, I can see it just as sort of astounding that we're just.
And, you know, so I have said that, you know, maybe one of the underlying themes in my work is an attempt to distinguish between materialism, the idea that we are just made out of matter, and nihilism, you know, because there's still this very strong tendency to think that materialism implies nihilism, you know, that the idea that we are only made out of matter, that means, oh, well, suddenly, like, okay, all life is meaningless. And, you know,
right. Rape, pillage, and burn.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the Dostoevsky each other with thing. Impunity.
Yes. Yeah. And I very strongly disagree with that. You know, we are able to make our own meaning, you know, even if there is no God. I think that is what we can do, and that's what we actually do. You know, we do make our own meaning without there being
without the need of some guiding moral being, that morality is inherent somehow. You can discover morality in yourself.
You can have genuine, like, moral principles and have arrived at them, you know, through your own experience and your own, you know, sort of cogitation, rather than being reliant on a supernatural source for them.
You know, some people think like you, if there's no God, then you discover morality like a scientist discovers a fact, that there are sort of moral facts out there. And then there's another school that's like the Nietzsche existential view, which is, it's almost like it's a creative work of the imagination that you actually make. Because after the death, you know, famously Nietzsche said, God is dead. And then Jean-Paul Sartre was sort of making fun of the existentialists who were like, yeah, but we're just going to go about our business as sort of like the religious people, where same ethics, same morality. And then sort of the hardcore existentialists are like, no, you're making moral good as you go, like an artist makes a painting or something. That's kind of scary because it leaves the possibility that you could have an existential hero that's also like a serial killer, or, you know, it's no, like it the is. Taxi that's driver, really, American Psycho kind of scenario.
Well, a reasonable starting point for morality is, you know, just... It comes out of lived experience and empathy of the sort where it's like, you've been hurt, you've been lied to, and you know what it was like. And so you realize that you shouldn't do that to someone else because it has been done to you and you didn't like it. And so...
do unto others.
Yeah.
No, and that's where like the karmic... It's a system of karma actually works better sometimes than thinking of morality, which seems so rooted in kind of Judeo-Christian. But this idea, and I think I said this to you, Steve, I've talked to a Zen Monk, and somebody said to him once, you know, how can I know if it's good or bad karma? And the guy said, does it feel bad? Do you feel bad? Does something bad happen to you? That's how he was judging it. If it makes you feel bad, it's probably wrong that somebody did to you, and then don't do it to them.
Yeah. And what moral philosophy is trying to do is like, okay, can we come up with a system of principles which agrees with our intuition in matters where we feel like, okay, I have a strong intuition about, you know, that this is right or wrong. And then, you know, if that works, then those rules can help us in situations where we don't have a strong intuition.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
That's good.
That's
a good point.
And, you know, in some ways, this is sort of analogous to science in as much as, like, you're trying to come up with a system of rules which explains, you know, the observations, and then, you know, how, you know, can it predict
a model?
You know, what does it predict in a new situation? And, you know, so if we can come up with some idea of moral rules or guidelines which match up with the things that we, you know, we know we feel, and then it's like, okay, then how well does it do in situations where it's like, okay, I don't know what is the right thing to do here. So is it appropriate for children, for parents to choose the genes of their children? It's like, off the top of my head, I'm
can't look at the Bible for that,
like,
one.
I'm not sure. And so then, you try and come up with arguments which, you know, are based on situations that we, you know, do have strong intuitions about, you know, what principles are at work, and then how do those principles apply in this new situation? And, you know, this is obviously far from infallible, but, you know, the role of sort of our moral intuitions, our experience, you know, that is, I think, essential, as opposed to trying to reason from, like, a purely logical position. If we, you know, in a purely abstract universe, without regard to anything I've ever felt, like trying to design, laws of what is good or evil. Yeah. It's like, and, you know, to sort of tie back into like the idea of, like, you know, like, if artificial intelligence, can we trust it to, you know, with decisions with real moral weight? And some people say, like, well, you know, they think, oh, it's so smart, it's going to know what is the right thing, you know, even when we don't. And I'm like,
all right.
No.
You know, if there is an entity which has never felt pain, you know, would you trust it to, you know, if there's some entity, you know, which, you know, has been, you know, like, no matter what how it was treated, it never felt anything. You know, would you say, like, okay, there's someone that I trust making decisions? It's like, no. You know,
that's the last
kind of entity that you would want making decisions.
I've worked with some people like that in Hollywood, so.
Yeah, I'm sure you have.
And he's going to name some names.
No.
Well, this has been a treat. Thanks for joining us. We hope you had fun. We'll meet you back here again next week. Wag on, weirdos. Chinwag is a production of Treefort Media and Touchy Feely Films, hosted and executive produced by Paul Giamatti and Stephen Asma. Executive producers for Treefort are Kelly Garner and Lisa Ammerman. Dan Carey is executive producer for Touchy Feely. Our series producer is Rachel Whitley Bernstein. Original theme music by Luke Topp, with additional music by Via Mardot. Oscar Guido is our executive in charge of production. Tom Monahan is head of audio for Treefort. Animation created by Alex Sokol. Editing and mixing by Jeff Neal. Lastly, for more information, go to chinwagpod.fm and find us on Instagram or TikTok at chinwagpod or on Twitter at chinwag_pod.